Congress must shed its reputation as our most dysfunctional institution. So writes Dr. Kevin Porteous of Hillsdale College. He is a professor of political science, and he wrote an article recently in The Hill, and we have posted to it here on our website. Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Dr. Kevin Porteous. Dr. Porteous, good to have you on the program. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. Okay, so tell us about why you think Congress is dysfunctional.
Well, besides the idea that Congress and the federal government generally do too much, and that's something that a lot of people can understand, it's also the case, especially with regard to Congress, that they're not doing their constitutional job, which is to say to legislate, to make rules for the regulation of society, to make what Madison calls rules of action. They found ways to pass this off onto other institutions and other entities.
Oh, like, for example, the Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court's one.
Yeah, flesh that out a little bit. Take the example of abortion, okay? Abortion's very controversial. And go ahead and flesh that out, if you would.
Sure. I mean, if you take something like abortion, in the abortion case, the decisions were being made at the state level, but the basic problem is that the courts find themselves in many cases thrust into a position of having to decide contentious policy issues because Congress as a group is resolute in its refusal to address these issues. And actually a good place to go to hear this laid out, Chief Justice Roberts gave a speech recently, I believe it was at the University of Minnesota Law School, where he said, you know, part of what's going on here is that we're being forced to decide issues that properly ought to be decided in the legislature. And so we end up almost of necessity having to do these things that are not really our job.
Hmm. Now, by the way, criticisms against Congress are certainly nothing new. I can think of Will Rogers, can't remember his witty lines, but, you know, he had said something against Congress people. So did also Mark Twain. He said something like, you know, a corrupt congressman, but I repeat myself, something like that. I mean, so the Congress people or congressmen have been the butts of jokes for decades now, really.
Sure. I mean, yeah, that's always the case. People in our we've always had a tendency to make fun of politicians, politicians we don't like, and sometimes politicians we do like. But I think the critical difference is that for the first 100-plus years of our existence under the Constitution, Congress was structured in such a way that the interest of the congressman, which is to retain power, to get reelected, that was connected very strongly with the solid performance of his constitutional duty to legislate. And what the modern administrative state has done has provided the average congressman with alternative mechanisms that are less arduous in order to secure that interest.
Do they sometimes give themselves raises, you know, in kind of secretive ways, in effect, but this bill will pass, and you know, I didn't directly vote on it, but you know, I didn't veto it either. You know, something to that effect.
Yeah, I mean, I think in part it's, you know, obviously Congress likes to vote itself pay raises, and there's nothing, you know, there's nothing abstractly wrong with Congress raising its own salary. But what they have figured out is that they can sort of preserve their power and their position within the system, and they as individuals can retain office by doing things that aren't legislating. And if you think about where most congressmen direct most of their resources, it's really not towards legislating. So if you look at the way congressmen use their staff resources, for instance, every House member is given an allocation in terms of how many people he can hire. We've reached a point now where a clear majority of the average congressman's staff is dedicated to constituent services rather than legislating. And that's really important because it transforms the congressman from being a legislator into being a kind of errand boy who tracks down Social Security checks for people and helps them with environmental permits and veterans benefits and so on. And the reason that that's so powerful is that's a great way to build political support among your constituents without really making enemies.
Hmm. But I'm glad to have those services available. Is there a problem with that?
Well, I mean, given the fact of the modern state, they become, in a way, essential, which is to say, because so much of our lives are governed by administrative agencies, it is extremely helpful when you get caught up, and many of us have, in the tentacles of the bureaucracy, and not even out of malice on their part, simply because it's a gigantic, creaking, lumbering giant. I like to tell my students that they think that the system is Orwell's 1984, and it's something more akin to Terry Gilliam's Brazil, which is to say, it can be dangerous, it can be oppressive, but more often it makes mistakes. It just does foolish things. People fall through the cracks, and someone has to be there. But having someone there is a kind of second best solution. The better alternative would be to create a political system or return to a political system that didn't require these kinds of interveners in the first place.
Now, somebody that I know personally that did some lobbying on Capitol Hill, or I guess she was working for some of the members, something to that effect. Okay, a couple different Congress people. And she said a lot of what actually takes place on Capitol Hill, she likened to kabuki theater. In other words, it's more like a pantomime. What's really going on is what you don't see, what the public hardly ever sees, a lot of backroom deals for some of these bills, some of the legislation that actually is passed. Your comments?
Yeah, that's absolutely true, and it's been that way for as long as there's been a popularly elected legislature. It is a complaint of Woodrow Wilson's in his book Congressional Government, which was published in 1885. Mm. So it's absolutely not new. Now, what's changed is that we have enacted all kinds of sunshine laws to try and bring this out and bring this kind of behavior out into the open. The problem is that there's always going to be a place in a deliberative legislative process for private discussions, private negotiations. If nothing else, we attribute sinister motives to those, but at some level, it's also the case that those kinds of conversations give legislators an opportunity to work through ideas and work through problems and not have to worry about how everything they say is going to play back home in a private conversation. So it used to be, in Wilson's day, that these types of conversations happen behind closed doors in the committee room. Well, now, with the advent of sunshine laws in the latter part of the 20th century, those types of negotiations and that type of legislative activity hasn't gone away. It's just moved from the committee meeting rooms to members' offices, cocktail parties, email, so that it's still there. It's just been pushed further and further away from the formal business of the legislature.
If James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, Gouverneur Morris, some of the key founders of our constitutional system, if they somehow could come back and through a time machine and they come and visit the modern America system and see what's going on in Congress, what do you think their reaction would be based on what you know from the Federalist Papers and other writings of the founders?
Right. I think there'd be, if some things would look the same, and technically the chambers function under rules that are much the same as the ones that were originally used in the 1790s and early 1800s. So in that sense, probably not a lot of difference. I think they'd be appalled by the fact that if you turn on C-SPAN and watch somebody speak in the House or the Senate, what you don't realize is that it's often the case that the chamber is essentially empty.
Yeah.
I once got to sit in the Senate chamber and watch the proceedings for a while, and what I noticed is that there were exactly two senators in the room, a Democrat speaking and a Republican sitting there reading the newspaper, and all he was doing was making sure that if the Democrat tried something, like to try and get something pushed through by unanimous consent, that Republican would immediately object, call for a quorum vote, and bring all the senators back in. In other words, preventing shenanigans.
Yeah.
The complexity of the bills, I think, would be striking to them. And I think to say that the fact that they have lots of staff now, and that's why the bills are so big, is sort of to mistake the consequence for the cause. I think that modern legislation requires staff. It's not that staff generates massive legislation because they have nothing else to do. And the reason for this is we regulate so much and we carve out so many special exemptions in the law, and all of that requires enormous verbiage, and that requires large staffs. And I think that they would be kind of appalled by that, because not only would it be too much government, but it would also be the case that government was not making truly general laws anymore, but giving all kinds of special exemptions. Think about the health care bill and the Cornhusker kickback and Gatorade and all of those special deals that were made with moderate Democrats in order to get the legislation through.
Yeah, with the Obamacare bill. You know, it's interesting. I was thinking of Obamacare, and now that you mention it, I remember at one point somebody was keeping track, and they were showing how several of the senators that actually voted for it went down in defeat. That is no longer the case. Some of them have been reelected. But here's a quick question for you. I've been told that many of the staff members who were usually in their 20s and 30s, very young, but these people have wield an enormous amount of power. It's almost as if these 20s and 30s something run a lot of you know, what's going on in Washington, D.C. That's an exaggeration, but your thoughts?
It's not a total exaggeration. It may be to some extent, but one has to remember that the old sort of model of the congressman as this oratorical machine who wrote legislation and defended it, that's largely a thing of the past. What a congressman really is in terms of his day-to-day function in Washington, he's the head of a little administrative agency. Your average House member, right, every House member, is allocated resources sufficient to hire something like 18 full-time and 4 part-time staff, plus as many interns as he can jam into his office. And so that's a comprehensive constituent services operation, legislative liaison to administrative agencies operation. There are additional staffs for committee members. There are more than 10,000 staffers working for individuals, committees, and leaders in Congress today. And that's a gigantic bureaucracy that costs several billion dollars per year to run. And what that means is chiefs of staff and legislative assistants do have sort of considerable influence, because they're the ones that are drafting legislation. They're the ones that are hiring staff to draft legislation and to work with constituents. And so it's terribly important that a congressman, for instance, hire a chief of staff that he can trust, because that person is going to have a lot of influence.
And a lot of those people are possibly future congressional leaders or senators and so forth. Okay, we have about 1 minute left. How about a thought? This is recorded on October 22nd. A thought about the midterms in light of what you've been talking about, and also the threat of impeachment. Less than a minute to go.
So specifically related to Congress and the upcoming election, even though I'm very interested in Congress, and obviously the article that brought us together is talking about Congress, I think it's the case that in terms of legislating, it's not really terribly important who controls Congress right now, because Congress is doing so little legislating. I mean, as a conservative, I want to see conservatives retain control of the Senate, but not so that we can pass laws, because that seems to be not happening very much right now. I want them for the judicial nominations. And when it comes to the House of Representatives, the only reason I can really think of to be terribly concerned about the House of Representatives is to keep the investigatory tools of the House out of the hands of people who would make life miserable for President Trump.
All right, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Kevin Porteous of Hillsdale, hillsdale.edu. Thank you, sir. All the best.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.